from the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. Aside from being the educational and research center for the state, the University of Alaska is also in the business of public service, including everything from a graduate engineering program in Juneau to the canning of walrus and seal meat on St. Lawrence Island. We have with us today Dr. Arthur Buswell, Director of the Division of Statewide Services, and Assistant Professor Ron Sanungatuk, who heads the Extension Center in Arts and Crafts. The Division of Statewide Services, what do they do? We'll find out today on This Is Your University. Dr. Buswell, the Division of Statewide Services sounds like a very large organization indeed. Could you outline for us briefly some of its programs and some of its services?
Yes, I certainly can. The public service we talk about, of course, is related to education and in some cases is direct education in itself. We conduct the credit programs of the university that are actually held off the campus, around the state, in various locations, military installations, at community colleges, or here on campus in the evening. We have the, in addition to the those credit classes, we have correspondence study courses. We have the entire summer session program, which is largely an adult education, continuing education program, although we're attempting to develop that so that more and more of the continuing college student can benefit from the summer program on the campus. Some of the really interesting fields, however, come outside of the strict bounds of the baccalaureate and graduate degree programs. They're in areas such as the one we're going to talk about today, where we bring in talented young people into a program designed to upgrade their skills and give them something that they can take back to be in a better position to adjust to the world they live in. That is, provide them with a better income as well as having a better knowledge of the people they're dealing with and better ability to deal with them. Such programs as Upward Bound for high school students who have high ability yet are not producing as they should in their high school programs. The Cooperative Extension Service, which is the one we were talking about, the canning of walrus meat. Here is a commodity available that can be used but is largely wasted. However, through canning, possibly later through freezing, we can find ways to preserve this meat and have it available for the communities during the summer. Another area is in fur extension, where we're working with trappers, not in how to trap because they know that better than we do, but how do you handle the pelt and market it to get the highest return? This is our interest and concern in trying to help them to get back the greatest economic value. And it covers a very broad area. I could talk for great length at these things. The film library is another exciting part which is available to people all over the state by writing for our university film catalog.
Well, one of your services, Dr. Buswell, of course, is the extension of arts and crafts here at the university. And we have with us Assistant Professor Ron Sanungatuk. And perhaps, Professor Sanungatuk, you could tell us a little bit about who are the students involved in your program.
The students that we involve in this program are generally from village areas, and so far the people that we are drawing are mostly Eskimos from the Seward Peninsula area. They appeal to us because for one, they are ivory carvers, and they certainly know some of the Eskimo culture, which many young people are not very well aware of. But with this background, the ivory carving knowledge their capability with the use of their hands and the background on Eskimo culture, makes up a very, very interesting combination for a program that we have in that this group will be given opportunity to experiment with materials, different materials, and sense of design in terms of universal style that perhaps they are not aware of at first, and then also in terms of the older Eskimo style or native styles that they have not been aware of.
A look at the Division of Statewide Services and of the Extension of Arts and Crafts. We had with us today Dean Buswell, of the Director of the Division of Statewide Services, and Professor Ron Sanungatuk of the Extension of Arts and Crafts. Thank you very much, gentlemen. This is your university. This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program aired by this station as a public service. It was produced by the Department of News Service and Publications at the University of Alaska in cooperation with the university radio station KUAC. Your announcer has been Paul Quist. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting System.
From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. What's the great Alaskan winter sport? Is it mushing teams of sled dogs or skiing down slopes of that powdery white snow so much in abundance in Alaska? Dog mushing and skiing are popular enough in the far north, but often the extremes of minus 40 and 50 below zero temperatures place limitations on just how much the participants, to say nothing of the spectators, can bear. And so, surprisingly enough, the most popular winter sport of Alaskans seems to be basketball. It's an exciting, fast-moving sport that can be played indoors during the worst that winter can offer, and this year at the university, the winter schedule of games played in the Patty Gymnasium between the University Nanooks and visiting teams, such as the University of Hawaii, Puget Sound, and St. Martin's College, has been packing into basketball fans in Fairbanks. Capacity crowds of 2,000 are not uncommon for weekend doubleheaders, and the Nanooks haven't played a home game yet this year that hasn't had at least 1,000 enthusiastic fans looking on. The story of the university's basketball series and the growing popularity of Alaskan sports is our story today on This Is Your University. We have as our guest today Al Finnegan, head basketball coach at the University of Alaska. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, George.
How many road games have we played this year?
We've been on the road seven times, or have played seven games away from Alaska.
And how many home games have we played?
With St. Martin's this weekend, we'll bring up our total of home games to 7 and 8.
The Nanooks have been having pretty much of an off year as far as winning games are concerned, Al. Yet we have some players that are scoring high enough to make some of the better players in the Western United States basketball circles. Is there any indication that next year we'll be doing better?
Well, I think there is every indication that next year we will do better. We're counting on such players as Milo Griffin and Gary Schaefer and Glenn Vargas as our mainstays for next year's ball club. Then, of course, we do expect to do some recruiting.
What's the advantage in sending the team on such expensive road trips outside?
Well, I think the advantages are many, but just to briefly explain the answer to that question, one is that we need quality competition, and the only way we can get that is to bring teams in here and then return the games. I also think it helps to promote our university in its total program.
If basketball is successful, what can it do for the other sports that are played at the university and for the athletic program in general?
Well, I think that any athletic program that is successful, basketball or hockey or whatever it might be, helps to breed success in the other programs. And right now we are emphasizing, of course, the basketball program here, but we're not de-emphasizing the other sports such as hockey, skiing, and swimming. We feel that in the future years, and we hope in the near future, that these programs will grow in terms of schedule, in terms of quality.
Why are athletics so important here at the university?
Well, we feel that athletics is important because it provides an outlet, both physical and mental, from the daily routine of study and this type of work. We feel that the weather, of course, is a real factor here, and that we need to give the students something to do indoors physically. And you can be physical in the stands at a basketball game, as any basketball fan knows. Also, we feel that the total athletic program, which includes the intramural program, is extremely important here. Our building is open almost 15, 16 hours a day, and when the classes aren't in session, all the activity areas, the gymnasium, the weight room, the swimming pool, are open for student use. And this is an important phase of our program.
Thank you, Coach Sunnington, for being our guest on This Is Your University. This Is Your University is recorded weekly by the Office of News Services in cooperation with University Radio Station KUAC and presented by this station in the public interest. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.
Serving the needs and demands of a growing Alaska at your university.
From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. ...1967 was a tragic year in Alaska mountaineering. After years of no death and few injuries on the 20,320-foot Mount McKinley, almost 10 climbers lost their lives on the Big Mountain during 1967. One death came during the epic first winter assault on Mount McKinley early last year, and the others occurred when an entire party was almost wiped out by high winds and storms during the busy summer climbing season late in the year. In a new emphasis to make climbing Big McKinley safer, as well as to probe other basic questions of man's physiology in the Arctic environment, scientists in the university's Institute of Arctic Biology this year are tackling an expanded program of basic research into just what happens when men work at high altitudes and are exposed to combined elements of high winds, sub-zero temperatures, and physical fatigue for long periods of time. A three-year grant of over $400,000 from the Department of Defense sponsors the program, which will involve a dozen researchers in the institute. Well, the Defense Department is interested in what would happen to American troops if called upon to fight in high mountain areas. Scientists at the U of A hope the study will make McKinley safer to climb with more knowledge of how man works and reacts when at high altitudes. It's our story today on This Is Your University. Hydroxia is oxygen starvation at high altitude. Pilots and mountain climbers have traditionally faced its potential danger. It can be deadly, for often the victim never realizes what is happening until it's too late. On the side of a mountain, physical and mental alertness is almost a critical necessity when climbers realize that one false step could mean a slip, a fall, injury, or death. Scientists have long thought that at high altitudes, man can lose as much as 50% of his mental ability. And now a program of research into what happens to man at these altitudes is underway on the university's West Ridge at the Institute of Arctic Biology. Man's physical organs work just as well at 18,000 feet as they do at sea level, explains Joe Nava, executive officer in the institute. However, the difference comes in the human brain. Lacking oxygen, the brain is often simply unable to coordinate actions of the physical organs. Most high climbers can recall situations in which their thinking was impaired and their judgment poor. The effects are insidious, for the climber almost always thinks himself as thinking clearly at the time. Nava points out that climbers can be made aware of the dangers of oxygen starvation by controlled exposures to simulated mountain conditions in an altitude chamber prior to the climb. Scientists in the institute hope to establish an Alaska Mountaineering Center on the West Ridge adjacent to the biology building. Here, climbing parties could train for a McKinley assault and get themselves adjusted to the thin air in altitude chambers. They could study in a special library on books on Mount McKinley and written accounts of earlier climbs. Lecture sessions by research scientists would acquaint them with the effects of the mountain's harsh environment. The program of testing has been going on since a pilot program was conducted last year. Climbers are tested for physical and mental response before they go on the mountain and after they return. The tests include measurements of balance and perception, physical exertion, and mental calculating. The program began with tests on climbing teams on Mount Logan. The first Mount McKinley team under the Institute program was the Winter Assault Group in March of last year. Later in the summer, researchers conducted tests on the 18-man Alaska 67 party. A new research dimension was added when two Institute workers, researchers Steve Sayre and Dr. Kenji Miao, were landed on the Big Mountain to conduct tests on the team members during the climb itself. Besides pure physiological research, the Institute is interested in other factors at work when men live under harsh conditions of high altitude. Such things as morale and what can happen to personalities all have an effect on a climber's ultimate performance. Even close friends can become irritable during a stay at altitude. Feelings of fear, guilt, or doubt can be magnified, and personality changes can bring out latent changes that can upset personal relationships in a climbing team. You're a different person up on the mountain often, Joe Nava explains, and the difference can be like night and day. At high altitude, morale can diminish greatly. Lassitude and lack of motivation to do even the simplest camp chores can set in and have an effect on the ultimate success and safety of the climb. The university's program in high altitude research will answer many questions asked since there have been mountains to climb and men to climb them. The program will make Big McKinley safer to climb and will be one more service to the growing needs of a growing state at your university. This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program aired by this station as a public service. It was produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUAC-FM. Your announcer has been Paul Quist. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting System.
From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. It's interesting sometimes what people do in their spare time. Take Dr. Robert Forbes, for example. He's head of the university's geology department, and his full-time job is running the department, teaching classes, counseling geology and mining students, and working in applied geochemic research project since he's a noted geologist in his own rights. But he also happens to be a volcanologist, one of those special types of scientists specializing in the study of volcanoes. And in his spare time, he watches and studies volcanoes, since he happens to be the only volcanologist in Alaska. But Dr. Forbes's spare time volcano watching is not just a personal project. It's something the university takes a strong part in, and keeping an eye on erupting active volcanoes near populated areas of the state serves a very special public safety service to Alaskans. It's our story today on This Is Your University. It's always winter up on top of Mount Wrangell. Even during summer, when the rest of Alaska basks in mellow, warm weather, it's cold and snowy near the volcano's 14,000-foot summit. Since 1964, Dr. Forbes and his two graduate geology students have manned a summer laboratory perched 200 feet below the smoking summit of the volcano. For several weeks out of the summer, Dr. Forbes and his assistants scoot around Wrangell snowfields on skis and snow machines, taking measurements and making other experiments in the study of volcanism. The university's volcano research program began in 1964 as a cooperative scientific venture between scientists from Alaska and Japan, titled The Geochemistry and Petrology of Volcanic Rocks. The study concentrates on geochemic analysis of lava from Alaska and Japanese volcanoes to find out more about the volcanoes themselves and possible origins of the Pacific Ring of Fire, the belt of active earthquakes and volcanoes circling the Pacific Ocean. Since the program began in 1964, a new dimension has been added to the volcano study. A seismic earthquake monitoring system, established in Alaska since the Good Friday earthquake of 1964, has been extended to the volcano project. Under the direction of Dr. Edward Berg of the university's Geophysical Institute, seismic monitoring devices have been established around Wrangell to measure intensities of pre-eruption earth tremors that could warn of a possible eruption. Ultra-sensitive seismic monitors built to record quakes too weak to pick up at the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Surveys College Observatory were set up around volcanoes in the Katmai National Park in 1965, and since then have been moved to other parts of the state to record quake activity. Dr. Forbes's research project on the geochemistry of volcanic lavas is primarily a study to determine the origin of thick, blocky, andesitic lava and that characterizes Alaska volcanoes as well as other land volcanoes in the world. By contrast, volcanoes that erupt and build themselves into islands above sea level from the deep ocean floor are characterized by a thin lava that flows evenly and quickly. The difference between the two is important to scientists, as it may lead to the discovery of how and where the lavas originate, which in itself may help answer the basic question of how the volcanoes themselves form. Aside from pure academic research goals, the public in general can benefit considerably from studies of the two lava types, for the difference could hold a clue in developing a means to predict one characteristic of the Alaska andesitic volcanoes, violent eruptions. The problem Dr. Forbes points out comes in the basic difference between the two lavas. Basalt lava is thin and flows easily from magma chambers beneath the Earth's surface. Andesitic lava is thick like dough. It moves slowly up through a volcano cone, and it often solidifies, forming a plug in the volcano. It's when volcanic force behind the plug grows until it bursts the plug that violent, sometimes catastrophic, eruptions take place. When such eruptions take place near populated cities, vast loss of life and property sometimes occur. The university's program in volcanic study could lead to possible methods of predicting violent eruptions, saving lives and property, and providing one more service to the growing needs of a growing Alaska from your university. This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUAC-FM. It's been brought to you by this station as a public service. Your announcer has been Charles Sandberg. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.
From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. The growth of Japan in recent years into a modern, highly industrialized nation is creating a growing need to import basic raw materials necessary to support new industry. Isolated by Red China to the west, the Soviet Union to the north, and the broad expanse of the Pacific Ocean to the east and south, Japanese industrialists are looking more and more at a nearby source of raw materials, a big wilderness land of vast untapped and undeveloped resources, Alaska. Alaskans are already seeing the effects of Japanese capital pouring into the state's economy, creating jobs and building stable industry. In southeastern Alaska, Japanese-owned timber companies are setting up pulp mills and exporting timber products by the shipload to waiting manufacturing plants in Japan. To help find ways of encouraging the new Japanese interest in Alaska and help in the stable development of industry and commerce in the young state, the University of Alaska's Institute of Social, Economic, and Government Research has undertaken a study of Japanese trade potential with Alaska. The story of the Institute study and some of the recommendations is our story today on This Is Your University. Our guest today is Professor Arlen Tussing with the Institute of Business, Economic, and Governmental Research at the University of Alaska. And Professor Tussing, could you first of all tell us when this study on the Japanese interest in Alaska will come out?
Well, the study is at the printer now, and I expect within a month or so we should have copies available for distribution.
A study of this size and magnitude probably has to have some outside support. I wonder who sponsored it.
Well, the actual support for the project came from the Economic Development Administration of the U.S. Department of Commerce. The project was initiated and the funds were obtained from the EDA by the Federal Field Committee for Development Planning in Alaska, whose chairman is Joseph H. Fitzgerald.
What does Alaska have that Japan really wants?
We found that the products that were worthwhile investigating export potential to Japan were logs, lumber, wood chips, and wood pulp, crude oil, natural gas, and petrochemicals, iron, copper, and other metallic ores and concentrates, coking coal, fish and fish products, beef, mutton, wool, and reindeer, and what is economically an export, even if it takes is a service right in Alaska, tourism. Now, not all of these markets have been developed in Japan, or not all of these products are being produced in Alaska for Japan, but these are the areas of potential importance.
How do Alaskans feel about this interest of Japan in our natural resources?
Well, by and large, Alaskans are interested in anything which brings income and jobs into the state. The one exception I would mention is in the fishing area, particularly in some of the fishing communities which have been distressed by declining catches per boat. There's a considerable hostility to Japanese fishing industry and in some cases to Japanese entry into the state in general. On the whole, this sentiment on the part of some of the fishermen and the fishing communities is an exception, however.
Well, our thanks to Professor Arlen Tussing for being our guest on This Is Your University this week. This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program aired by this station as a public service. It was produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service with the University radio station KUAC. Your announcer has been Charles Northrup. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting System.
You've been listening to the University of Alaska Radio Forum. Your moderator was Dr. William Painter. Join us next week for another discussion of a topic of contemporary interest. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.